You have the agenda in front of you, but we will not look at the minutes and the letters arising from minutes now. We will go to the second item in the program. As the portfolio committee, I'm sure you are clear of what our mandate is, ladies and gentlemen. Ours is a constitutional mandate. We derive it from the Constitution. And as the portfolio committee, we've said this many a time, that yes, ours is a constitutional mandate. We have to oversee what the Department of Arts and Culture and its entities, what they are doing. But our oversight is not just and oversight. We don't oversee for the sake of overseeing the department and its entity and its entities. We said it as a portfolio committee that we are there to support as well, because we believe that if the department achieves what it sets to achieve, it means that the society as a whole achieved. So this is the attitude that we have at the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture. Yes, to oversee, but also to support and to help wherever we can, to advise. Because when you are in a situation that I think that you don't see, that people, it's only the people that are on the outside that see what is happening. So we are there to say, this is what is happening, be aware of it. We've asked the National Lottery Board to be part of our meeting today. We are aware that they are an entity that is overseen by another portfolio committee. But we've been having meetings since we came into being last year. We have been having meetings with artists and art institutions, and they've been complaining, saying that we apply, but sometimes we don't get acknowledgement of a receipt of our document. Sometimes we receive communication that our application has been processed and has been approved, but 3 years down the line, we have not received the mandate we were promised. So we didn't want to just assume what may be happening. This meeting is focused on art and culture, on distribution to artists in arts and culture institutions. So we hope that after this meeting at the portfolio committee, we will have information that is going to assist us to assist the artists and arts institutions and the department. So it's when people are called to a portfolio committee, they are like, oh, what's going to happen there? They are scared. No. We usually say in this portfolio committee that you are here to share information with us. We are going to ask questions, probing questions, but be assured that it's not personal. In this committee, we don't personalize issues. You know that if we ask you a question, it's because we want to know. There's nothing hidden. We are transparent and we want to get information. And when we ask questions, we hope that we are assisting the institution or the department to be able to see the gap and to deal with the gap. This is what we are about as the portfolio committee. Before I give over, to the National Lottery Board, I would like us to introduce ourselves. I am Kosi Sotom, chairperson of the committee. I'm going to give honorable members first, and then if there are other members from another particular committee here that actually oversee. So whatever you say, you must know that your committee is here. Members of your committee are here. They've been invited to be part of this meeting. We welcome them warm-heartedly, and we are hoping that this relationship that we are starting today is a relationship that we are going to have for a long time. I will give over to the honorable members to introduce themselves, then I will give to the ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Chairman, my name is Chau Mashanda, General of the Committee.
Thanks, Chairman. My name is Thomas Mako, Member of the Portfolio Committee.
Na khensa mfumo xitu ri twa mina hi mina khensa wa ka vila nkulu no one wa ti member ta committee ngo
inkosi chairperson ahala ngoko sobedi as a member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning everyone, my name is Adrian Williams, I'm a member of the portfolio committee for trade and industry. Thank you.
Morning, I'm Mr. Zamaraka, I'm the trade and industry committee.
Good morning, I'm Alan Grootboom, member of the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture.
Good morning, Leru Mungala, I'm with Trade and Industry.
Good morning, I'm Dean Lankerson, and I'm a member of the Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Kornos, I'm also a member of the Trade and Industry.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I will now give over to the members of the board. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the House. I'm Alfred Chikizimukana.
Good morning, honorable Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Thabang Mampani. I'm the CEO of the National Lottery Board, which is transitioning to become the National Lottery Council, and then my designated commission, and my designation will also change to be that of the commissioner.
My name is Philemon Ndwaba, I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the commission.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Willie Ray Tang. I am the Deputy Chairperson of the Arts and Cultural Distribution Agency.
Morning, Chair. My name is Mokoto Desi. I'm from the Department of Trade and Industry.
Good morning, Chair. Honorable members. My name is Robert Billy. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Trade and Industry, responsible for, amongst others, the lottery policy and education. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members, Chair. My name is Wuyo Jack, the Acting Director General of the Department of Arts and Culture.
Chairperson, Member Secretary, my name is Mike Hinton. I'm the DDG for Arts, Culture, Promotion and Development at the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, honorable Chair, honorable members. My name is Manuel Kildimo. I'm Director for Youth in the Department of Arts and Culture.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Mabel Sarabini.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Murugan Madiba, Chairperson Tesla.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Apologies, Chair. Temporary cost of law for logistical reasons. I shall disappear. Senior Executive on Funding, National Sport.
Thank you very much. We also have amongst ourselves the committee, the management committee. Can you please introduce yourself? Because these are the people that are working with us, and we'll guide you to know who they are.
Good morning, members. My name is Ashabrin Jumish. I'm here, committee secretary. Thank you.
members. My name is Jonathan McKaysen. I'm the implementation of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture.
Good morning. My name is Rodolfo Zamora. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Fiona Kaysen. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Barbara Kadana. I'm the executive secretary to the committee.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'm now going to... There is a member who's not introduced himself. So welcome, honorable member. Can you introduce yourself?
Wilson Rabutati, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We are now going to give over to the National Lottery Board for the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. President. The presentation that I'm presenting here today, although it will be specific to the art sector that we have in the NLB, we have presented it to the select committee on the trade and industry. We also presented it to the portfolio committee last week, portfolio committee of trade and industry. But we are going to look at the introduction. We have introduced ourselves, a brief history of the art sector in our National Lottery Board, the operational model, and the dual mandate that the NLB is having, the strategic overview, roles and responsibility. Well, Honorable Chair, as I indicated, reflected there, I'm the chairperson of the board. When you look at the history, the NLB has been established through an Act of Parliament of 1997. This year, in the last year, we celebrated 16 years of existence. It was 15 years last year. This year we are now celebrating 15 years of our existence. Ever since we have been formed or established by the Act of Parliament, we have distributed more than 18 billion to good causes since our inception. These 18 billion and above went to organizations that fall under charities, sport and recreation, as well as arts, culture, national heritage, and miscellaneous. On the 14th of April 2015, the Lotteries Amendment Act came into effect with many changes, and I'll deal with those changes that we find in the Amendment Act. As the National Lottery Board, which is going to be the National Lottery Commission, in terms of the minister, announcing it, but in terms of the law, we are a commission because we must operate according to the Act that has been effected from the 14th of April this year. The commission is coming up with very good things. In the past, the lottery board has complained about the manner in which we are structured, because the way we were structured, there was a board appointed by the parliament here or the minister, and there was other entities called distributing agencies which are appointed separately from our appointment. So the reporting mechanism was a challenge. And the oversight by the board to the distributing agency was also a problem. But the new act has solved it. Even ourselves, I think, we started engaging each other to make sure that because we are appointed for the same thing, the board allocate money to the distributing agencies in terms of the agreed percentages from the shareholder with the Department of Trade and Industry. In other words, the percentages, they come from the shareholder in terms of public participation and scrutinizing them. They give us as a policy and it becomes part of the regulation. This new act, the amended act, it provides us with an opportunity that we never had. The distributing agencies all along have part-time people who are appointed by, you know, through nomination from the public, and they come as and when the organization invites them to come and adjudicate and go. So this amended act provides us with an opportunity for them to be part of the organization, that is full-time distributing agencies whose task will be to adjudicate projects as when they come. So the issue of backlog will no longer be in the National Lottery Commission, because the distributing agencies will be full-time. And chairpersons of the distributing agencies will sit in the board when we are discussing issues of grant funding. They will also take part in the discussions. Well, the amended act also provides us with an opportunity to conduct education to the public so that the public will know and understand how to apply. Because as of now, we were doing this, but we're not doing it at a scale where the public could say, no, there are enough education. So we're going to do the education and awareness on our calls, about how to apply, about the form, how to fill in the form. The amended act also provides us with a proactive funding. In other words, the commissioner and the people who will be there for a research, they will go to the place and understand things that are problematic in that area and come and put a report to the board or to the distributing agency to make them aware that an area around Eastern Cape, there is a high need of a school, or there is a high need of an ECD center, or there is a high need of a museum. The place is rich in the artifacts. We need to create such a building in the Eastern Cape or in Popo or Mpumalanga. That will be discussed by the board or by the distributing agency, and it will be funded. In other words, it will not only be application based. For now, the act that ended on the 15th, there were only the act was saying there's nobody who can just bring in the application. There has to be an advert, and that advert will detail what we need. If it is about us, we'll detail what project relating to heritage, relating to music, relating to festivals, relating to environment, and whatever. So this time, the commission will have an opportunity to go and identify. Say, for example, in Mpumalanga, there's something that we could see that the department is not touching in terms of us. We'll go there and make sure that we write the report, and the commission will facilitate through the distributing agencies or the board so that such a project is funded. That we call it a proactive funding. In other words, we are going to be more targeting to areas that are disadvantaged. In other words, will not just be free for all. It will be an area where we will indicate, for example, we may decide to make a call for KwaZulu-Natal only in terms of the arts. We may decide to make a call for Mpumalanga only, just to target, to increase the status of arts, the status of music, the status of heritage in that area. So it will not be free for all. The amended act also provides us with differentiated grants. The act that is gone, you know, it was not specific. The form that we used is a gazetted form, which even if you want 50,000, you fill the form like a person who wants 3 million. So in other words, there was no difference. The way it was written is that I understand the cry from the public, because they will tell us that even a professor can read it in 1 week. He has to study it and make sure that he feels it correctly. So imagine people who are in the rural area. The form created a lot of damage. So this time, the act allows us to differentiate in terms of the grant. A 50,000, a 500,000 grant, the requirements are not as hard as a 5 million grant. We are going to look at what you are requesting and what are we approving on that score. And even the architects are going to be tailor-made according to a small grant, medium grant, and large grant, so that we are able to make sure that for the beneficiaries, there is what we call accountability in terms of the grant. If it is a small, they will report according to their grant. If it is a middle one, they will report according to the grant. If it is a large grant, for example, 20 million, 10 million, or 40 million, definitely, because we are accountable to Parliament, we'll make sure that such a beneficiary provides everything that the NLD wants, and we are satisfied about the usage of that grant. The next slide is about operational model. The NLD or the NLC from the 14th of April, we are a regulator of the national lotteries and other lotteries, as well as sports pools. Sports pools and, you know, other lotteries are these societal lotteries. For example, if a school wants to raise the 1 million, they have to apply to the National Lottery Commission, so that we give them a certificate to raise that 1 million. So it is regulated. In other words, you cannot raise more than what we have regulated you. The National Lottery here, on the beginning, I think when we started, it was Utingo. And the Utingo was hosted by Gilan. And as of now, Gilan was ousted by Ituba, which is the National Lottery Operator. We take money from the National Lottery Operator and put it in the trust of the NLC. We put it in the trust, and that is the money that we give to beneficiaries for good causes. Then the other work that we do is we are the funding of choice. We have got a division called grant funding. It is the one that when the board appropriates according to the regulations, they process grants, they process applications, and send them to the distributing agency for adjudication. As I said, Honourable Chair, in the past, it was the grant funding was structured in such a way that only part-time DAs, not the political party, DAs would come and adjudicate. This time, that's from January next year, there will be full-time DAs, so there will be part and parcel of the commission. The money is put, as I said, in the trust. We call it National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund. That is the fund that makes the NLC to operate and will give it to the NGOs. Under the NLDTF, National Lottery Distribution Trust Fund, there are these bodies. I said they are going to be full-time now. We have got distributing agency for us. The percentage there is 23. It was 27. It has been reduced to 23. The distributing agency charities is 47 now. It was 45. It has been increased to 47. Distributing agency of sports, it was, it is now 28, it was 22, it has been increased. Distributing agency miscellaneous, it is now 2, it was 5, so it has been reduced. The NLC has got priority in terms of the arts. What we prioritize in the arts sector, number one, is protection and promotion of traditional knowledge and cultural expression. Two, promotional work of arts and crafts produced by people with disabilities. Three, development and preservation of heritage sites for revenue generation. Promote and support entrepreneurial development of women for farming projects. Before I come to the subsectors of this, Honorable Chair, you know that in the NLC, every year, before we do budgeting, we call departments that are related to what we do in the NLC. For example, when it comes to sports, we'll call the Director General of Sports to come and present the plan, the priorities in that department, so that when we do advocate and make calls, we understand what are the priorities of that department. For the arts, we'll call the Director General to come and make a presentation, a detailed one, so that we know the priorities. For social development, we'll also do the same. And this has been ongoing. I think this is the third year we are calling upon those departments to come and present, and the distributing agencies and the board will listen and check, oh, yes, there is this that we need to support. For example, people out there, you see the revitalization of school sports. It has been a presentation that came with the Director General to say, now the department is focusing on the school sports, but this is not a funded mandate. Therefore, the NLC will sit down and check with the little coffers that the money that they have, they will make money available to make sure that full sports tonight. The sub-factors that we have in the heart are as follows: cracks, dance, environment, festivals, film, heritage, literature, music, theater, and visual arts. All these sub-factors. What is the distributing agency? Because they are the ones that must discuss among themselves what they would want to fund this year. And they will brainstorm and come up with how to cover all those sectors. The problem that I see from the communities or beneficiaries is that some of them will only apply one sector festivals. And we are trying to say that South Africa is not only based on festivals. There could be some projects like to build a museum, to build a heritage site. So these people must be taught to apply for yes festivals, but they must be under items like environment, greening of our towns, greening of our villages. They must do planting of the trees. They must apply. But because our people are social nerds to one sector, they look at those items. The last item that has been designed for me to indicate, which the deputy chairperson will also try to summarize, is the challenges that we are facing. We must indicate to this honorable house that arts, culture, national heritage is a very big sector. When the distributing agency, the board, makes an asset, the applications that come there are voluminous. In such a manner that the demand is more than the supply. The 2013 advent or call for applications, I think when we combine them, when we check what beneficiaries wanted, remember we only distribute 2 billion every year. But that year, 2013, we received a request for 72 billion. And ever since the NLC, ever since inception, the NLC has never made 72 billion. So the demand is high. The other item is that, as I said, the arts sector is so complex in terms of their applications. They request a lot of things, and the distributing agency finds it difficult to arrive at a decision for one project. With charity and sports, it's very easy. Somebody wants a ground. That is a ground. But in the art, they will have to detail everything that they want. The other thing is that we are still backing with the backlog of 2013. I discussed with remember they come twice or once per month. I discussed with the deputy chair after presenting it to DGI portfolio committee to say what mechanism can we find, because we are still having close to 500 projects that we need to finish. So from the deputy chair, he has agreed that they are going to work tirelessly before the end of July. They will have done with all the projects that need to be adjudicated. And on the side of the board, we agreed that because since the arts sector didn't have any call from 2013, this year we will allow them to issue 2 calls. Well, the budget is small, but the board of directors will find a way to meet the pathway to make two calls at least. They can make a targeted call for small projects and another call for the bigger projects. And they're going to adjust gain tirelessly in order to make sure that at the end of the financial year, they are through with whatever brought to them. The next slide, I think the management will explain.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this is just a high-level overview of our strategy in the organization. Our vision is to be a catalyst for social upliftment, and our mission is to regulate all lotteries and sports pools with integrity and ensure the protection of all participants, as well as to maximize the revenue for good causes in a responsible manner and to distribute funds equitably. Our values are to serve with integrity, to ensure performance excellence, service excellence, and social consciousness. That has been translated by management into four strategic objectives. The first two strategic objectives, one and two, actually meant to support what would be related as the core area or the area where we're delivering the mandate. The first one is to enhance administration. The second one is financial sustainability. Jefferson spoke a lot about the 2 billion and the fact that there are many communities that are really asking for funding, and it's been a challenge for us to meet that funding. And after a thorough interaction with the board, we're looking into that area seriously to see if there are means or ways in which we can actually grow the plant and make so that we can reach more communities. Strategic objective 3 is compliance to the Act, and that has mostly to do with the monitoring of the operator of the license and ensuring compliance in that area, because that's where revenue comes from. And the most critical one, I think, that we're here for today has to do with fair and equitable grant allocation, and focuses mainly on grant funding. And that's the two actually are talking to our mandate in the organization. Just quickly, Chair and members, our strategic overview of grant funding. The key drivers for the National Lottery Council Grant Funding Commission Grant Funding Division are fulfillment of the NLC mandate brought into effect by the amended Act and new regulations. I would like to develop an integrated e-system. We have had technology that has been in the organization since inception, or since the National Lottery Board came into existence, and we're trying to make sure that we modernize the organization by improving the system so that we can also be able to deliver services to different communities speedily. Human resources also has to be upskilled. We're looking at the competencies of grant funding staff, and we're going to be aligning that with the requirements of revised or new business process, as well as information and communication technology. And there's a direct correlation between the available funds for distribution and the number of projects that could be funded within a particular financial year. And also, we're busy preparing for what the Chair has already alluded to, for the full-time distributing agency members, and we're hoping that this will have an impact on the workflow, but with the view of making sure that we are able to respond to all the applicants, not to respond only for them, to know what the outcome of their applications are, and also to communicate the outcomes within 150 days as stipulated in the new regulations. In terms of this division 10, we have a program that is meant to drive delivery, and I will just focus on the 3 divisional sub-programs. The first one, the purpose is to provide support to the distributing agencies and to ensure that the grants are distributed according to a legislative mandate. So in terms of this program, grant funding will develop and implement an integrated grant funding strategy They will review and implement grant funding policies and procedures. They will also ensure funding is distributed equitably as it appears in our mission as well, but that should be done efficiently and effectively to deserving causes in line with the national legislation and the National Lotteries Commission's policies. And we will also ensure that the program to educate and create awareness on grant funding happens to all those communities, particularly the ones that have not been able to access our funding since inception. The third program, too, is on service delivery and support. The overall management of grant-making process in support of distributing agencies, we will look into that to determine the effectiveness of the grant-making process, and the view there is to ensure that there's continuous improvement and we meet the needs and the wants of our beneficiary family. We provide clearly defined functions of provisional offices. We have as a way of taking services to the people, which is a mandate from the board. We have established provincial offices so that our people can no longer travel to Pretoria when they want information or would like to access our funding. But there are offices in all the different provinces, and all of them are operational at the moment. We'll also ensure that there's implementation of streamlined grant funding processes. Amongst other things, the chair explained the new offerings that came with the new legislation, one of them being targeted costs as well as proactive funding, that much as that will happen internally, we're developing policies that will ensure transparency in the processes that will be unfolded. The grant funding and service delivery program, I indicated, is constituted by our provincial offices, so at any given time, there will be an opportunity for beneficiaries who would like to be provided with services in terms of charities, arts and culture, and national heritage, sports and recreation, as well as miscellaneous. And at this point there, I think I will ask our chief financial officer just to take you through the budget for the arts sector. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thanks, CEO. The budget for the arts sector, Chair, is as follows. We have, for a period of the 6 years of our existence, distributed 4.3 billion to this sector. And in terms of what has been committed for the 2014-15 financial year, we have allocated 443 million towards the sector. And maybe just for the purpose of clarity between your hard and soft allocations, we are referring to what is hard is an amount that has been confirmed and available for payment to the beneficiaries. The soft, the conditional appointment conditions that have been imposed by distributing agencies. The next slide deals with the budget allocation for the all the sectors. For the 2014-15 financial year, our budget was 2.2 billion, and you notice that for the past 3 years, we've already been maintaining the levels of about 2 billion in terms of our budget. In terms of how it has been allocated for charities, the total budget of 1,529 has been allocated for this sector. Out of the budget of 623 million, 444 million has been allocated for sport and recreation. Budget of 489, 315 million has been allocated. And lastly, for the miscellaneous sector, 111 million has been budgeted for, and 122 has been actually allocated. And in terms of the number of projects, yeah, for all the allocated amounts under the charities, we have donated 1,288 projects. And as ambassador, we have benefited 211 projects. Under sports and recreation, we benefited 422 projects. And lastly, under miscellaneous, there has been 52 projects that have benefited out of the budget of the NLP. The next slide shows just the history over the past 3 years in terms of how much we have been able to allocate in terms of the budget. 2013, there has been 24 billion that has been allocated across all sectors. And for this sector specifically, in 2013, there was 384 million that has been budgeted for and allocated. In 2013-14, there's been 2 billion overall. For this sector specifically, the amount has been 492 million. And lastly, for the current financial year, as indicated, we've got a budget of 2.2 billion, and this sector has been 633 million out of the budget. And historically, which is purely because of the percentage allocation, the sector has been the most effective of our budget throughout. Except for the current financial year, due to the changes in the legislation. Chair, my next slide deals with the issues of the priority areas in the subsector that we have been able to assist in terms of the total budget allocation of 143 million. In terms of the four key priority areas, protection and promotion of traditional knowledge and cultural expression, there has been 251 million towards that. Promotional work of art and cast produced by people with disabilities, there's been 18 million that have been appropriated. Development and preservation of heritage for revenue generation, 87 million has been allocated towards that. Promotional and support of entrepreneurial development of women for farming projects, the chairperson and allocation of 86 million has been made towards that. In terms of our subsectors, for craft, 42 million has been allocated. Dance, 12 million has been allocated. Environment, 85 million has been allocated. Festivals, 22 million has been allocated. Film, 39 million has been allocated. Heritage, 50 million has been allocated. Literature, 5 million has been allocated. Music, 43 million. Theater, 32 million. And visual arts, 106 million. Chairman, I would like to hand over to Mr. Dupuy, our senior grant funding executive, to just discuss the turnaround time for the management of the slides. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, members. Just before I speak to the slide, just to recap, in terms of the 2010 regulations, there was three turnaround times. All basically dealing with post-adjudication. It was for the time between adjudication and notifying the beneficiaries. There was also time for the beneficiaries to come back to us with the offer that we have made for them. And thirdly, from acceptance or receipt of a compliant grant agreement signed by the beneficiary, payment should happen within 6 days. With the amendments that came into effect 14 April, for the first time now, additional time frame was set for pre-adjudication phase. In other words, for received applications up to adjudication. And that's what the Commissioner and the Chairperson have referred to. So, Chair, the first slide, I was just trying to give a sense to the committee of where we're coming from. And just to say to you that, for example, in 2009, for the first 6 months, we only managed to pay 11% of those adjudicated applications within 3 months, which you never say 90 days. In 2010, that increased to 44%, and in 2012, it averaged at 90%. So we were using 90 days, obviously, where we are now, we obviously using the marker of 60 days. The board has always maintained, and even when we have received memoranda from disgruntled NGOs, the board's position was always that they share the sentiment that overall there's a need to reduce the turnaround times. But I think, Chair, if you members have listened to input from the Chairperson, the Commissioner, is that there has been some restrictions both in legislation and also in the way the operational model was set up that contributed to those time frames. Hence, Chair, I think the Minister at our first Indaba, actually, Minister of Trade and Industry summarized actually the categories of reform that needed to happen. And the first one basically was within the board, was in the court of the board. It just dealt with administrative efficiencies, etc. Then there were the regulatory changes, which then ultimately culminated in the 2010 regulations. And then finally, Chair, with support of the Portfolio Committee on DTI, the Amendment Act was signed by the President in December 2013, and as the Commissioner indicated, came into effect 14 April of this year. And just as an example of the administrative action, tighter format management system were to choose to deal with the reduction of the post-registration turnaround times, as indicated in the previous slide. And during the Indabas, there is basically a couple of resolutions taken and based on the challenges that NGOs and beneficiaries are experiencing on the ground, that is getting articulated. Can I just give another example of how we try administratively to deal with efficiencies is we used to just mail out via the post office our allocation letters and grant agreements. As part of those administrative actions and what we call the next stage quick fixes, we introduced the mechanism of emailing out those grant agreements and allocation letters, which brought some serious efficiency gains in terms of the time that it takes for us to get a grant agreement back. I have indicated here in terms of the regulatory changes, and part of those changes in July 2010 was the introduction of the time frame that I earlier referred to for post-certification mechanisms. And change is now a fact and a known fact that the Minister, together with the Portfolio Committee, then deliver on legislative amendments as through the Longest Amendment Act, as I indicated previously. So, Chair, what we are basically currently continuously doing as part of what we are doing to improve is, in the previous slides, you would have heard reference to business process review. And part of that review was to look at what is that we can cut out of the system in terms of the business process that doesn't add value, duplications, and so forth.
Thank you very much, Chair. We would like to thank the members of the portfolio committee that has joined us. And we are hoping that this is the beginning of our relationship. We are hoping that you will invite us as well in your portfolio committee meeting, Honorable Chair, so that we begin this integration that we need so much. I think it's very important for us to do this more often. Thank you very much for raising this meeting. And all the best with your meeting.
Thank you. If I may, Honourable Chair, if I may just say, it's for us very constructive, and we have asked one of our committee secretaries, Mr. Medema, to remain behind, as well as the Honourable Bongani Mkongi, who's in Manco, who's coming out of strategy in about 10 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. All the best.
Thank you, Chair. I think Chairperson, in your introductory remarks, you just referred to some of the frustrations expressed by those you come into contact. One of the, or two of the points that was raised were raised during research we conducted a couple of years back, I think it captured some of those concerns. The first area was in terms of the application process, in terms of from application to payment, as you said. And yes, Chair, it's true that at some stage it would have been months and sometimes years before somebody gets the acknowledgement letter. And that's what I was referring to where we're coming from. And obviously, as you also indicated, once the beneficiaries complained about the list for the release of subcontractors. So in my last report slides, Chair, I will then deal with some of the current turnaround times relating to those post-certification processes. As Chair, I've already indicated some of the interventions. In addition to that, the pre-funding capacity building will also become a very key thing for us. So in addition to our awareness creation that we always had with our call patients, we have our capacity building framework approved by the board in line with the legislation, where we also introduce a more structured capacity building. For example, from the progress reports that we review, we can clearly identify certain skills and capacity deficiencies within our beneficiaries, for example, project management, reporting, financial management, so forth. So part of our new dimension that we are bringing in is to do more structured interventions around those particular skills areas. Changes in terms of some of our recent steps relating to those three time frames that I referred to. And as the chair, I just want to indicate again that from the administration and the board and the security agencies, there is a common objective and a shared sentiment that we must continuously work towards improving this. So the first one, deal with informing the applicant of outcome of the adjudication after adjudication, chair. We, over the last 3 months, and chair, some of the reasons, if you look at several property payments, part of the low percentage they can contribute to our December now period. So depending on when that particular adjudication happened, you would then have that, for example, for schools, like schools closing, you would then also have a question of the end of year shutdown and so forth. So part of the contributing factors for February 15 relatively low figures is due to that. But you can see here we have managed to improve on those over just the last 3 months. From March to 15, we actually jumped with 40% to attain 100% turnaround time within the 30 days. The next one, Chair, is dealing with the return of those grant agreements by the beneficiaries. And again, Chair, you can see there some low figures for February, for March specifically. And Chair, this is the one that usually I have explained to the board, and I know when we first discussed this, it is something that is hard to believe, but it is a fact that sometimes we basically have to chase the beneficiaries to get their grant agreements back. And some of those is to do with the capacity issues. There's also a lot of change in management of the NGO sector. So between the application and when the GA comes or when payment will be back, you will find Twitter addresses that have changed, management that have changed, and so on. So we've introduced additional mechanisms, and with our provincial offices now, we also use that infrastructure to follow up so that we can make sure that that grant agreement also timelessly come in. Chair, the one of the payments within 60 days, again there, Chair, if you discount the bulk of those factors I've mentioned in for December, which we have impacted on the February figures, we have basically April, in terms of our last case, we have achieved that 60 days turnaround time for all payment that was done within April 2015. We basically all have been done within the legislative 60 days. Chair, I just thought that we relate part of the research that I referred to. One of the questions that was asked was around about the compliance issue, and it was interesting that just 6.6% of that sample actually found it difficult to say that we have difficulty in reporting and so forth. But what we found, Chair, is that sometimes they comply. But when you start reviewing the progress report, you find out that a lot of information is missing, and that also then causes a lot of to and fro between ourselves and the beneficiaries for the payment of the second or the third tranche. There's a couple of other things, Chair, that obviously, as I said, contribute to that. In August, obviously, we were hard hit by the post office strike, because although we have the email facility out yet, we need to receive the original grant agreement back, and also looking now with our legal department about how we can, within legislative frameworks, even deal with that hindrance of getting original documents back. Chair, just then to again re-emphasize, if you talk to beneficiaries, they will talk about the latest processing of the progress reports that have been taken. They will talk about they need a little bit more engagement with the NLD, within the sectors and around the project themselves. There is a complaint sometimes about lack of communication in terms of continuous communication around the status of the project. That's part of what we have done now with our business process review. We will now build in our information technology system an increased number of automatic SMS and email notifications about where your project is. In other words, as the project is being assessed, although now currently we have 3 to 5 of those phases, where we basically notify the applicant, but based on some of the feedback, Chair, we've actually now increased, so when our new system comes into being, we will now have much more of those interim feedbacks to our beneficiaries about what is happening with your project. The non-responsive to beneficiary queries, Chair, I'm here to report that our last report from our contact center in the perception survey that was done by an independent company is quite encouraging in terms of the improvement around just the way beneficiaries are feeling that we are responding to their queries. There is still beneficiaries that feel it difficult to comply with the reporting requirements, hence then the intervention around capacity building. I would like to share that from our side, we are sometimes frustrated by the lack of responsiveness by beneficiaries in terms of the getting confirmation of certain information. The contact information sometimes changes regularly, so you are sending out a letter, it comes back, and so forth. And so part of the remedial action that we are looking at is what a lot of institutions have is to do periodic proactive confirmation of contact information so that we don't, at the time we need to communicate with you, we then find that your address has changed or your email address doesn't exist. Chair, I've talked about the limitations, the deficiencies of some of the grant-making the system itself, which is being dealt with. And unfortunately, Chair, we also have experienced increasing attempts or real to corrupt and to actually to defraud the system. For example, Chair, we used to only check registration of accounting officers and auditors. Then we were hit by a pattern, Chair, where we found out that a lot of the organizations or the statements that we received, in some cases, people were basically stealing their cash from auditors and putting their financials on top of that. We found that a lot of the auditors are not registered with their respective professional bodies. When you contact the auditors, they say they don't know the organization. And I'm going to share that the downside of that is that means you have to institute more mechanisms which impact now negatively, negate now your attempts to make the process faster. But I think, Chair, from a judiciary point of view, the board obviously have a responsibility to deal with that. And then the misrepresentation by agents, Chair, we, on a daily basis, we are getting people phoning us, saying they've been contacted by a person, and saying you're representing the National Lottery Board, and they must have made progress reports through them, or they've been appointed by the Lottery Board to assist them, etc., and then they ask the people 10%, 10%, 15% of what you would receive as a grant. So there's even signed agreements, Chair, to say that if you get funding, it's either you're going to use me as a service provider without any competitive process, or automatically you must pay over 10% commission into my account. Chair, there was also a request just to indicate, I'm sure the CFO will be to answer. This is just the outline, Chair, in terms of the request of interest accumulated on the funds over the last three financial years, amounting to 774 million rand. Obviously, Chair, that money is part of the budget that is used for allocations and so forth. So that's all basically all coming in. Chair, around the issue of incubation for small institutions, historically, Chair, we had the partnership model, which I must also immediately indicate, created a lot of problems by itself. But basically what I came to say is to say that if you are an emerging organization or a small organization that doesn't, you don't meet the requirements for funding as per the regulations, you can then partner with a more established organization. And then the organization then apply on your behalf. There will be then a memorandum of understanding, the design in terms of implementation of the project. Going forward, Chair, we believe that the amendments regarding proactive funding will deal with some of those needs, because now the Commission, the Minister, or the Board actually, as the Chair indicated, proactive identified. So some of those needy organizations that don't qualify under normal circumstances will be able to be helped under the proactive funding. There's differentiated grants, Chair, very important one, because smaller grants requirements, as the Chair indicated, will be much lighter than your medium and your, and believe part of the category that they couldn't submit applications on their own previously will now be allowed and facilitated to do so through the small grants. For example, say, one of the big relief there is the issue around audited financial statements, where for the small grants, the requirement is basically for you to submit financial records instead of your audited financial statements or accounting officer reports. That's just one of the examples, Chair. And there is no provision made, although now the provision is very tight for you to prove why you can't apply on your own, but the regulations still allow for applicant that can't meet the requirements here to do so through an agent. But as I said, the requirements are actually very tough in that regard, and we believe that that will also address some of the issues under the partnership model. Chair, I think this one I would not speak a lot because the Chair actually indicated and the CEO that, as I said, where we previously done an application-based process or a model for Council Chair, when the board decided to contribute towards the disaster relief fund a couple of years back with the disaster, what could it just go in there and fund? We had to engage with the relevant stakeholders and say, please submit the application and then adjudicate on that. So that is part of the limitations that has been experienced, and we believe with that second leg in our proactive funding, we will be able to even, as the chairman has said, be more focused, strategic, in terms of the interventions that's being made in all the sectors, including the arts sector. So that's just an indication of, just in terms of a recap of the creative cultural industries, share of what they got from that allocation in the previous financial year. About 350 million or 61% of their total budget was spent around the creative cultural industries. Chair, that is just basically again a breakdown of the a more detailed breakdown of those subsectors, which we obviously indicate that visual arts experienced an increase of 24% from the previous financial year in terms of their share and class 10%. Chair, the next slide, sorry about the print, but that is just a couple of the examples, Chair, and I don't think I need to go through it. But it's just to give an example to the committee about some of the projects in those particular subsectors, Chair, that we've been talking about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And the reason why we gave you enough time is because you are presenting to us for the first time, and there are a lot of things that we need to learn as well as the committee, and there are a lot of questions that we have. And as I said earlier, we will ask questions based on the presentation, but we will also ask questions based on things that are happening in our own constituencies, because members that you see in front of you here have constituencies, and their constituency is a case, yeah? A case. And then I'm not sure whether people in that area do understand how to apply to lot of about application. And I think this is what is really important, is for everybody who is in this country to be able to apply to the process, to be able to benefit from the process. Let us appreciate this eye-opening presentation, because there are a lot of things that we didn't know that we know now after the presentation. And let us appreciate the fact that you've measured yourself. You've actually took back, looked at the way you were performing and said, this area we are not performing well. Let us appreciate that, because as the committee always say, it's important for any organization to do that, just to look back and identify the gaps and the weaknesses, and to appreciate the fact that you have done with the department, working with the department. Ours is focused on art and culture. The presentation was helpful because it gave us information on even other areas, and we're okay, we're able to see what is happening. But my question is, on what basis do you allocate the percentages? Because I see we are 23% of the arts and culture, and you know, so we are here for arts and culture, you'll understand. So the basis on which you allocate the, and you have said it, yourself that when you talk about arts and culture, it's quite broad. It's not just about open, but it's broad. That's like, it's very broad. And this is why we would like to understand how you do your allocation. And there's this interesting term, equitable. What do you mean when you say you want to do this? You want it done equitably. Because looking at the things as they stand now, or maybe to say to you, how far are you with this vision of you being equitable? I think that should be helpful for us as a portfolio committee, because sometimes the attempts that have been used and didn't understand them. The other matter is, we appreciate the fact that you're going to go big on education and awareness raising. The fact that I raised earlier, yeah, that's about the way. This is good, but do you have the capacity to do this? Because sometimes it's good to dream, to have this. We want you to show us that we are going to do this. We're going to go to those rural areas and raise awareness and educate people about the work that we are doing and ensure that they are able to benefit from this. And the proactive funding, I think it's a good step that you are taking, because as a leader, you need to have, to be able to anticipate things. I think it's good that you don't just go because people have applied, but you do research. Because as I said earlier, sometimes people who are in the situation for a long time, they feel like it's normal for us to be in this situation. There's nothing we can do about it. But when you come in and say, let us go through a process of development, people say, okay, think of a better plan. Are we people who are staying in this environment? So I think it's important as well. I'm now going to give over to honorable members to ask questions and make comments as well. Honorable members? Honorable Makondo? Honorable Blangulu, Honorable Melville, and Honorable Masham, in that order. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Of course, we'd like to appreciate and welcome the presentation by the National Lottery Commission. I think in this chair, it was an eye-opening presentation that gives more clarity on how the commissions operate and how they distribute funding to needy projects. I want to follow from where you left, Chair, from the point that previously the arts and heritage sector was receiving 7%. And from now on, we receive 23%. What informs that? That could be the first question. But the other point, Chair, that I want to raise, it relates to the contribution of the GDP by the arts and heritage sector in our economy. Currently, that's around 3.5 billion rand. When you compare with other countries on the very sector, look at the US, the contribution to the GDP, that's around 504 billion US dollars. You look at the Nigeria, that's around 805. Billion Nigerian Naira, even though the Naira is very less compared to our rent, but the contribution is very big, because if you convert that, it gives you 53 billion. And I think
sitting where I am, Chairperson, the arts and heritage sector in South Africa has got a very huge potential to contribute to the GDP. And with the 23% that is going to receive, I want to understand that point in relation to that. Because in most of the cases, unlike the charities, the arts sector has got a potential to create, in the main, full-time jobs. But what is important is the way that is being done there is professional work. So I wanted to understand from the commission as to what informs that. I'm also here to check about that the new act which has come into being will be able to assist the commission to target specific areas which would have potential. And you might find that there is no resources allocated for that. I think it will assist in making sure that the potential that is there is able to be kept on by the commission. I think we need to welcome that, but also we need to welcome the turnaround time from 9 to 6 days. We hope that it's a positive move by the commission, and we appreciate if the commission would be able to stick to that particular point. The other issue which is very important is the differentiation, because you find in the main people who need help from rural areas are not well educated to complete sophisticated forms, so that will assist in making sure that even ordinary people are able to access funding from the commission. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Dilangul.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to appreciate the report and Flo one wanted to meet with Lothar, because he heard that there is money. Number one, I think Mr. Makolo also dealt with the issue of form. I heard the Chairperson saying that the form that they were using before, it was too difficult to complete, and which means even to our ordinary members outside there, it was difficult. So we appreciate the thing that you reviewed it, and it will be simpler for them to go through or to complete it. Number two, I wanted to check the issue of your office. Where is your office situated? Where our people, when our communities, when they apply, where are they getting this application forms to? Another thing is the issue of the backlog. You did mention the 2018 backlog. What happened on 2014? Are you still dealing with that 2018 backlog only for that particular financial year, or it's continuing from 2018 up to today? Number three, when it comes to funding, mostly, you know, there is this issue of mushrooming of projects. How are you managing it? Because mostly when people had if you had a project and you apply, you know, notary to give you funding, you will see a project mushrooming from one area or one community. How are you dealing with that one? I just want to give an example of the ECDs. You'll find that in a community where more than 5 ECDs, and you ended up not knowing how to control them. So in your issue, how are you dealing with that if you happen to find a... The issue of applications. After receiving the application, I heard that there is a code or there is a number sent to the applicant. Is there, I don't know how to put it, Because it seems as if there are different people dealing with that. And there are people considered to apply through them in order to be successful in your application. Can you clarify that? Is it true that really if you are, your application to be directed to Ms. Dilanguru, that's where your application will get through, and when you take it, you direct it to Honorable Tom, they know that he's going to be school tonight. That relationship, how does it come? Is it something, or there are some payments being done in order for one to be, for the application to be approved, or how, or what they mean? Lastly, is it true that it's for what? Okay. I think the problem is here. The extent of which the LAB strives to contribute towards building the creative or cultural industry in South Africa. I think mostly are happening in Gauteng, KZN, one in Free State, I think one in Limpopo, one in Western Cape. Can you tell us as to how are you finding out, or is the issue of going out for outreach, you are still going there in order to find a lot of communities of cultural industries to apply from lottery or what? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for the report as well. The statistics are good on the turn down, because that has been a complaint all the time, and I hope that's pretty good. That's a complaint I have all the time. And it seems there are some major complaints, and I would like to have that, to take that for the future as well. My first question is from the complaint that I normally get, and I'm not sure how it works, was specific on charities, and something like a home for a disadvantage, for example, disability people, quite a whatever. And then they get something for roughly this year. Must they apply every year? Because now they say we budget for this next year, and then we don't get it, or we get it so late that we couldn't plan on it, whatever. Must they reapply every year, everything over, or is it something that you can say come out in for the next 5 years or something like that? Just to make it easier for them, specifically our small. They tend to start depending on it, and suddenly if it's not there, they're in big trouble, and then they come to us as to help them. And then the second question on heritage things, they said development and preservation of heritage sites for earlier generation. I'm not exactly sure what it means with revenue generation. Is that the condition before you get something? Or what does it mean for revenue generation? You talk about heritage sites. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Mashambu, and this is you, Honorable.
So thank you. I have a few questions to raise with members of the board here. First of all, I think we should appreciate the quite an elaborate presentation by everyone that is involved. Perhaps I should premise my input by stating something that I believe is something worth mentioning, that, you know, we have quite a lot of activities, departments, entities in the country. And if you look at all of them, they are basically a cluster that is very crucial, and we unfortunately happen to belong to that cluster. You know, the thing that keeps our communities and our peoples together across the globe, in the main, it's arts, culture, and sport. And even as we are approaching the World Cup, I mean, if you look at South Africa over the past 20 years, the time at which we can go back to and say, at what point in our life did we find something that mobilized everyone behind it? It was when we held the Soccer World Cup in 2010. So this is activity that keeps us together as a people. And there are some people who don't say culture is the glue that keeps us. And therefore, the mandate of the board
telling, and I want to believe that the allocations as they stand, or the mandates that the board has and the areas of funding that the board is responsible to, are well thought out. And I think we couldn't have thought of any other better manner to deal with that. Now, coming to your presentation, and I can't agree more with the colleague behind me here who asked the question, you did indicate that there was a reduction on the allocation to Arts and Culture, although you did not say why. As you mentioned the Arts and Culture portfolio, surely you should have anticipated that we want to know the reasons, because we believe that and because we do not know the reason, we feel a bit unhappy that Arts and Culture has been reduced. And whereas the chair, we really could indicate the magnitude of the portfolio. So we are very offended, committee. Your presentation, something that then comes into mind, and I think because we don't have reasons, we must speculate. And the first question that came to my mind about the reduction is about the profile of the board. Do you have inner board members, people who come from Asian culture, people who would be champions and advocates for this sector? It would be interesting to know, Chair, so that in future we can always recommend that we have a sizable number of people who come from the Asian culture sector. We are happy with the approach that you are adopting. I think my colleagues have already spoken to that around the each meeting. I think the chair will speak to issues to that matter around education of our people. Well, the changes in presentation did indicate that since 2013, there has not been. I'm just trying to follow what you said. Since 2013, there has not been allocation for something like that. A call on this set. Hence the complaints, Jefferson, of the committee, when we met the entities, everyone is complaining that no one is taking care of us. I am yet to understand the call against the allocation, because I'm lost. And why I am lost, because whereas you did not have a call, but there were allocations, and perhaps the question that was raised by Honorable Dr. Muller is perhaps the answer, I don't know, but yeah, it would be interesting why there was no call, and indeed as the chair, the reason why we finally felt we needed to speak to yourself is that almost all the entities that we have met ever since we were appointed last year, or ever since we came to Parliament in more than a year, everyone that we met is complaining about lack of allocation from yourselves. So I think it is for that reason that we felt we really needed to have an engagement with you. I believe that the chair will make sure that on an annual basis we are able to meet with yourselves so that we are kept abreast, so that when we meet these entities we are able to account to them. The chair raised a very important question about the equity. You have spoken about equity without qualifications. It would be interesting to know what we are talking about. And this takes me to this set of presentation which has not been presented today, but which we had received earlier on. Because actually raised very interesting matters to which my colleague, the last one, did try to allude to. On that presentation, not that I don't have the page, but when you have the provincial breakdown, it's not part of this one, it's the one that we received, it wasn't presented to. When you have provincial breakdowns, well, there could be an error in that document, I don't know
ever prepared it because there were two Northwest, I assume the other one that's in the Northern Cape. And if it is the Northern Cape, I think it will have to know which one is the Northern Cape and which one is in the Northwest. And in the first Northwest, I could see that there are no conditional allocations. But the rest of the other provinces, there are conditional allocations. And as a person who is coming from Mpumalanga, obviously, I am a bit disturbed by the same allocations because it is the least. And even the conditional trick or the free state, it's also free state and the support network, it's also quite under allocated. I'm basically looking at equity, you know, when you take the metrics that SFC, Financial Fiscal Commission, is using to arrive at certain allocations for provinces and whatever you have to do. I do find your this slide that speaks about provincial allocation to be skewed in terms of the fiscal and the financial commission methods of making allocation. I mean, as they speak to departments as to how they look at different things. So I find this one a bit terribly uneven or unequal. No, not unequal, but taking the necessary equity attributes. So it would be interesting really to speak to that because it's a very crucial slide, I think, for us as a committee. And not that I'm speaking from Mpumalanga, I just speak for the whole country. I would like to see equity in the whole country, taking into account the development and the underdevelopment. Normally, clearly, the amount that goes to Gauteng, when Gauteng is one of the most advanced, most developed, indeed it has the highest percentage of population, but the level of development is a problem, as well as the data here where we are. Now, as I conclude, Chair, you know, and I'm going to put this thing, and I know that it will be somewhat unfair, but I think because of the statement I'd like to make, you know, once I was in the province a few years ago, there's an organization which is located in the poorest of the 18 municipalities we have in Mpumalanga. I'm putting it as an example. The poorest of the municipalities is Nkoma. I don't come from there. I come very far from spoiling Swaziland in Mozambique. Poorest in all respects. It has an organization which was taking care of more than 150 young people, boys and girls. Very formidable organization. The name was Matsamo. They had applied to Lotto on many occasions. Beautiful, beautiful, formidable project. Hosting a lot of tourists because they are located at the entrance of the border into Swaziland. Very strategic, very formidable. But they had to let go these hundreds of kids that were depending on it as a source of life, source of pride, source of exposure, because they would not get the support. So when they actually, because at one stage I was very close to them by nature of the portfolio, I was responsible, like I have to think in this portfolio. It was so sad that they had to let these kids, and I don't know where they are as we speak, but they had to lose the potential of realizing themselves because they would not be funded. And therefore, this slide that I'm talking about of under-allocation, under-support for Mpumalanga is actually something that draws my attention back to this strategy. And I want to assume by now those kids are somewhere loitering, getting involved in crime and whatever you do, because we fail to see an opportunity that we could harness to help our people. And check this, how I should conclude my input.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Mkhonto?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. No, firstly, I think my approval was extended from the Chairperson. I will come from another member. No, I just wanted as Chairperson to firstly appreciate the report from the board. And I've read this for some, but for the purpose of this meeting, I want to raise it again.
that 18 billion have been spent for actual development in our country since the establishment of this. That should be appreciated. It should be appreciated as a good story to tell. And I'm saying that the challenges that we are facing today in terms of more numbers of people applying for the intervention of Lotto makes us to be victims of our success. Must appreciate that. That we'll be successful, but there are challenges that we need to deal with at this point in time, not with extending that. So I will go to the question again on the vision. The vision is saying that you are a catalyst for social upliftment. And if you are a catalyst for social upliftment, I'm raising the matter very sharply of our artists who are dying in this compass. And what is the intervention of this distributing agency to intervene in that space through the transference of skills before our people could be popular artists and culture activists to understand, to save their money, to do everything? What is the role of this distribution agency? I'm raising this in the context of the proactive funding as a focus area. That this proactive funding can be specialized on this matter. We deal with it once and for all. The second one is the question which also raises all, and also in culture, of infrastructure development at a local government level. Because the intervention is local. But you find that there's a municipal infrastructure grant that is given by government to the local government. But you might find its way to other projects. And then if it was its way to other projects, local government applies to Lotto for a particular development that is part and parcel of their own responsibility. We need to look at this. Because if municipalities are doing their job, we can challenge this particular funding into other important things. This is the difficult and wasting of money. You take this infrastructure and you travel by with it, you go to overseas. That's for a one day meeting. So we need to look at that. I think members have raised the matter of the deadlock. Still a question, when do we intend to complete the question of finishing the deadlock? The last one is on consultants. Raising this, that these consultants are a problem, an impediment to development of the country. They are having more than three NGOs. They go to advise them deliberately that you must go and apply for lottery money. But they do cut and paste the business proposal from one to the fifth and get 150,000 from each of them. Money that could be used for the actual people is taken by people who are unscrupulous and milky in the state. So what is your problem of action to deal with that particular issue? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm sure you've taken notes of all the questions. I'm giving you an opportunity to respond to the questions.
thank you, Honourable Chair. Yeah, indeed, there were tough questions. But let me start by the Mpumalanga issue, tying it with the Bible we were using, which is the act that was approved by you honorable members. There was no way that we can do something different. The act and the regulation says at least you must have 5% in all the provinces. The money that you disperse, each province must at least get 5%. But here is the problem. The NLB, in terms of the previous act, cannot go and mobilize people and say apply in order to make this 5%. It's an application based process. However, that's why in the No Act we are having the education awareness, because our people were not in the know. And I, you are right on that movement, but the district you are referring to, I visited it twice last year because of what he has raised. When I was there, I realized that people have got less knowledge about what we are doing. I hope that they are going to do better in that district, because already a delegation came to the commissioner's office this year to understand fully how we are going to work. Yes, offices are in all provinces, and I think the commissioner and the grand parliament will indicate where the offices are. But however, the other problem, honorable, is that our people don't respond sometimes. In 2009, when I became the chairperson, 3 months I identified that the municipality in Mpumalanga, the one in Nelspruit, has been given 15 million around 2006. And there was no response. I took it upon myself to, because I know the people around there, to say, there is a fund which is just lying here. Can you come and resuscitate it? They came and resuscitated it, but among themselves, they fought, and the fund, I think it is gone now. It has been taken then because the project was not implemented. It was an arts project which wanted to do the tourism corridor around Mombela. So I think the onus is on our people. Sometimes they don't come, even if you tell them that they must come. The other thing that we need to agree is that what the percentage that you saw, I think that is a term that the officials use. We are hoping that at least as from last year, we were able to meet the target of 5% to all the provinces. But however, as the Honorable indicated, this issue of consultants, I don't know whether in Gauteng there are more consultants than in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. The thing is, applications are assessed on the quality and the preciseness of what the organization wants. If the mandatory documents are not included, and that is true, in the disadvantaged areas, or is very difficult to get the mandatory documents. And the mandatory documents are not inserted in by the board. They were inserted in by our own parliament in 1997, that you must have 2 audited financial statements. And I asked myself, the organization around Inkomazi, the organization around KwaZulu-Natal, which never operated, how can they have 2 sets of statements that are audited? And the word audited, I think all people who went to school understand that it must have an opinion. So that was a very big stumbling block. From 1997 until the 14th of April last year, we have to produce that document, say, but you don't have 2 audited financial statements there. If we just accept that application, the CEO or the chairperson or the visiting agency, they will be late, because they have commanded what the legislators put as a measure. So I think that thing has been definitely. I think the DTI they will respond to some of the questions. They will alert members how they left the requirement. The percentage again, which I will respond to. The NLB or the NLC receives a policy from the DTI. That policy might have been advanced throughout the public and the board participate, but the finalization of the regulation is not the competency of the board. It is the competency of the shareholders. This area, I want it to be like this. This area, I want it to be like this. It was 27, it's now 23, so I think they will share more like, they shared more like with us, and we said, okay, hard luck. Usually, this thing is not staged. Maybe after a year, the ask may go up again, more than the spot. The spot was down. Now it's up, so I think they will explain. Not that we are shying away from our mandate. It's that the roles of the board is not to make law, it's to participate in the law, in the regulations. And the final regulations come from the shareholder. The awareness, we will make sure that awareness is everywhere. We have started this, we have visited all the provinces once or twice. And when we make adverts, we even send teams to the province. So we do the capacity for the team to go and assist people who want to apply, how to apply. The headlock, the last call of the act was made around 2013. And then from 2013, they have been adjudicating, I don't know, see, how many were there? There were 4,000. There were 4,000 applications. Yeah, I think there were more than 4,000 applications. So they are very limited. I indicated here that these people are appointed somewhere. They are not full-time in the NLB. They come, usually they come for 3 days, twice a month, and come and adjudicate and go. So, as a result, there is a backlog, and we will issue another call. I think the decision person will indicate how they adjudicate, because it is not just for proof. They have to look what the person wants, and whether the application meets the requirements. The artists who are dying as coopers. I'm happy that the Department of Arts and Culture has initiated the process of forming an industry of the arts sector. It's a federation. Although we are here for sport, for art only, we have learned a lot from the sport. The sport is called SASCO. And SASCO will look at certain areas where they can assist the high performance area. So they've been enjoying this because they are funded by the national government. So I think from now that the FIFSA and the I'm thinking that we have already met with FIFSA, we understand what they want to do, how they are going to do it. And again, from the Department of Trade and Industry, I went to another organization, I think the Lodwan knows it, I can't. I think it's for the music, those people who are in the music. We agreed that at least as seed money, we are going to give them certain percentage of money so that they put offices wherever they are, whether they will be provincial offices or national offices, so that they can start utilizing the industry. The problem was that the arts were not coordinated. CEO?
Can you be mindful of the time as you gave us all this?
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, if you allow me, I think once the Chair has started to explain the challenges, especially with the arts sector, it would be a good thing for the Chairperson of the distributing agency to respond first, then I'll fill in where he's left out. Please.
No, thanks. Good morning, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. Mine will be to touch on a few points. I think largely we covered in the presentation. I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Artistic Agency. And my profession, I'm an artist, yes, for music and theater background. So, maybe it's important to share that. There are a number of questions that have been raised. I think the question regarding adjudication, I think as it has already been alluded to, it's a mammoth task. I think in the history of the NMB, the applications for 2015 has been quite voluminous. And it's been indicated to adjudicate this kind of applications, it's not just a question of saying, you know, the soup machine, we need this and that is adjudicable. It's huge proposals in terms of content, because we have to, our criteria is also to look into what impact, what job creation, how different is it from the other, and so on. So there can be hundreds of types of proposals, but most of them are not necessarily the same. So we're not just going to deal quickly. But having said that, we are taking serious note of the time that is involved in doing that. And hence, I think it's a commitment that we need to shorten the deadlock, committing to saying that by end of July we would have pushed it, because also we're preparing to make a call very soon. There's also a talk, an issue around the issue of GDP. Contribution that Honorable Member raised, I'll link that with the issue of artists and performers. I think it's Honorable Mashangu spoke eloquently around the issue of development. That sector is smart with serious underdevelopment, maybe as compared to other sectors like sports. Very disorganized, and maybe has the launch of the Federation of FIFA would assist in that. Now, this underdevelopment also comes out in terms of the GDP impact. It is true, if you compare it to the US is far ahead, way where you cannot even begin to compare. You take any sector, whether it's music or film or anything, including the Nigerian sector. But there are other factors, including the size of the population and so on and so on. And I think maybe more than that is to emphasize the point, Honorable Member, that it's about investing wisely in the sector. And I think the issue around percentage allocation should be an issue. Okay. To say, how do I assist this thing? This once upon a time is true for liberation that needs to be enhanced to now tend to become a tool for transformation and uplifting the lives of our people. So I think in that, regarding the GDP contribution, is just simply to say that. And just to say that, indeed, it's a serious crisis about the status of artists dying as poppers. But I think the Department of Arts and Culture has started the process, and where we are sitting as NLC and as adjudicators in the distribution agency, we see that vision of saying we need to invest something to improve the lives of our artists and create more opportunities for them to be able to pick out a thing for themselves as well. Now, the other issue is about, I think the point was raised by Honorable Nelson,
is the issue about heritage. Is raised an issue around heritage as income generation? Yes, but first and foremost about preservation of heritage. Preservation and promotion of heritage, but also income generation for sustainability, because one of the measurements that we also use and look at is to say, even when we find a project, what can we look at in terms of job creation? But it also itself sustains itself. We spoke about the issue also, honorable members spoke about the issue about the Marichia family. I think in the new Island Act, there's provision for such that it can be looked at. And I think we've taken that very seriously to say that it will improve continuity, stability among within the organizations out there. So I think that is taken care of. I think the other ones, maybe the last one that I'll talk to and leave others or other members to talk to is the issue of infrastructure that I think Honorable Ngoga spoke to. I think we are being informed. You will see in our steps that the numbers are quite heavy in terms of being loaded with organizations that are both doing festivals, screenings and whatever. But we try to strike a balance to say, we also need to look, particularly as we move forward, we also need to look at investing infrastructure that kind of leadership and sustainable development is not only having mass of kind of things, but to say we need to leave a legacy where we have world-class museums or heritage sites that are well-developed, festivals that are sustainable, that are talking economic language, are creating jobs, and therefore are inclusive. So there is that balance amongst those kind of objectives. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I promise to be quick. Chair, I just like to say we really appreciate the comments and advice from honourable members. But on a lighter note, Chair, I wanted to indicate that there's so much passion in the organization that is at the NLB for the arts sector. I do not know whether Chair and members know actually that our chairperson has two PhDs, but one of the PhDs is in music. So we have one of the greatest artists in the organization that is spearheading also the sides of those people, and if they're passionate about that. Chair, one other important thing that I need to comment about is that our funding has been application-based. And not only application-based, there had to be a call for applications for a particular sector, except for the miscellaneous sector only. But with the amended legislation, and I think we need to commend our board member and our DDG, Ms. Ntulu, who really worked hard on the amended legislation, that greater funding is actually going to assist us to deal with those particular issues where our people, you know, have not been very literate and have been battling with things like application forms, and we're hoping that that will be something on the path when we come to report to you next time, maybe next year this time, we see the difference in terms of that. Chair, I am not sure whether your concern around equitable distribution has been addressed, but in terms of the mandate we're given by the board, when we translate that into a strategy in the organization, we make sure, and it's a performance objective for us in the organization, that we have to ensure that the 5% allocation to every province. We are backing with some provinces, and last year, in the 15 years, it was the first time that we managed to achieve the 5%. This year, we have not made it in terms of Northern Cape, we are at 3%, and Mpumalanga, we are at 4%, but there's a continuous attempt to address that. That's where our equitability is coming from, and we try to translate that into what the members of the distributing agency are doing. With provincialization as one of the most important issues, we will start to see that coming out clearly, because it is about how for a budget in a sector as well, there is that 5% allocation to every province. The issue of the Western Cape, Gauteng, KZN, and I see it's Limpopo now that's following, not because our chairperson is from Limpopo, Chair, has to do with maybe the requirement in terms of all funding, the fact that it's NGOs and NGOs that apply and community trust. It is a fact that the Western Cape is the place with most NGOs and NPOs, as well as Gauteng, followed by Gauteng, and followed by Natal. But there's a lot of work that we are doing to try and deal with those issues, including encouraging people from my province, from the Northern Cape, to register for NPOs and NGOs. It's an ongoing program, but that is happening, Chair. And I think earlier on, our negative program funding indicated that we already have developed a framework for that education and awareness, and we will put measures in place to make sure that the implementation actually makes an impact in the communities, especially the ones that are getting to reach the 5% target. The location of our offices, Chair, we will distribute the list. I thought Mr. Dupree would have put it on the screen, but we will distribute it. I think the first presentation that we sent, and maybe, Chair, I needed just to explain the confusion. We sent that presentation, and I think there were areas where members were specific in terms of what they required, and hence we sent another one. The last one, Chair, I just wanted to assure the Honourable Member that the issue of applying through individuals of knowing individuals, our portfolio committee, the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry, paid us a research earlier in the year, and maybe because from time to time we've been appearing before, then we've dealt with that issue. Because I think the member indicated that people receive a number. The whole process is automated. As soon as you submit the application, it gets into the system, and we do away with paper, and we refer to the number throughout the project after adjudication. So, you know, I think human beings are human beings. They could be trying to work on the system in such a way that they cannot do. But also in the presentation, I think Mr. Dupree alluded to the issue of fraud and corruption that we are fighting. Last year, on how we are dealing with the consultants, every time we go out on a call, we embark on special publicity and continuously, even on our website, to inform people that the NLV will send out people to come and educate you on the application process. So you don't have to pay anybody for putting together an application. Even before the issue of education and awareness was included in legislation, we've been sending our people home only whenever there was a call to go and educate people and assist them when there's a call. But now, with the new arrangement, it will be a continuous thing. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to ask you to allow our board member, Ms. Ntuli, to also contribute to some of the questions, especially around the issue of the 20%. Thank you.
5 minutes. Thank you, Chair. I think that's going to be more than enough. Chair, I just want to say that from the Department of Trade and Industry, when we look at the performance of the organization over the period in 2007, specifically, we received a lot of consent. We received a lot of petitions from organizations, basically asking the minister to put the organization under administration. So it was at that time that the minister then started the process to bring about changes in the organization. The identification of the problems pointed to a lot of problems that have got to do with the institution being inefficient in itself. But the second part of it was in relation to the legislation not being enabling for the organization to achieve what it needs to achieve. So there was a plan that was then implemented to bring about a change now in operations of the organization while the department looks at the legislative aspect. It's for that reason that now we've come out with the legislation which Parliament has prompted to address some of those issues. Chair, one of the concerns, and which is still a concern up until the new legislation is implemented, is that even though we've distributed about 18 billion, that money went largely to people that were good in preparing proposals. It didn't necessarily go to the needy organizations or the people that really needed the money. So that was one of the problems. A whole lot of applications
from organizations that have got real programs that might have an impact on communities were rejected and declined on the basis of not just meeting the requirements. So the model was such that if you are a consultant, then you can master to just conceptualize a program for a particular organization, then you get the fund. And so the fund did not really make the impact that we desired. And we're hoping that with this amendment, we'll be able to balance the need plus the proactiveness on the side of the organization. So I just want to then say that in terms of the equitable spread of this fund, it is informed by a number of factors. The first thing, the factors that are being supported with arts, sports and charities, and any other which might then be accommodated under miscellaneous. So you strive to achieve that equity at that level first, and that will be reviewed from time to time. And hence now there was a time to review the allocations to say whether they are still appropriate in the form that they were. And also the second element is the provincial spread. It's already been alluded to. You see that most of the provinces are not really getting that, and then a lot of the funds are going to only three provinces in the main. So that is the second element. Then you need to look at demographics as well in terms of the distribution, the demographics of the country, and balance that. So the Act also requires us to look at the sales of the lottery tickets, for instance. But that forms, we've decided to make that a smaller element of the process in deciding, you know, where the distribution should be. Because when you look at the number of tickets that are sold, they're actually sold in the same provinces that you're talking about, in KZN and so forth, it's largely because of the population sizes and where people are at in terms of work and so forth. So, Chair, that is the balancing act that we need to take into account at all times. So it is a consultative process, and during the amendment, this is one of the things that stakeholders requested now to be reviewed, because it has not been reviewed since the act was passed. So it was reviewed. The proposals, the minister is required to consult with the National Lottery Board in determining the final allocations after consultation, obviously, with the stakeholders and the general public. And in consultation with the NLP, the NLP recommended to the minister to adjust the art sector to 20% and a number of other areas, basically. But the recommendation to do that adjustment was based on the input from the National Lottery Board, as well as the stakeholders through a public consultation. And for that reason, said that in the initial publication, the 20% was the recommendation. And after consulting further within the 30-day period and having engagement with various organizations within the sector, it was then adjusted back to about 23%. So, Chair, I just want to indicate that is basically a consultative process, but it is necessary that at some point that we review the allocations to ensure that we arrive at some equity, which cannot be perfect. And we do understand that in some instances, members of the sector might be aggrieved, like the miscellaneous committee would be aggrieved because now they've got 2% instead of 5%. But the reason also for reducing miscellaneous is because most of the projects that were being applied for in miscellaneous were programs that fell under the art sector, sports sector, but largely because art has not had a call in a long time. So then there will be projects that will come in because miscellaneous doesn't have a time frame. It doesn't issue calls, so you can apply it anytime through that. So with the proactive funding and the frequency of calls that is going to happen and the full-time adjudication, there will be a need for miscellaneous. Therefore, we improve efficiencies in that area. So I thought that was the only area that I needed to clarify. But I just thought, Chair, there were two issues that were raised by the members in regards to, for instance, the pride of artists in this country. I want to assure you, Chair, that this is being attended to. We are working closely with the Department of Arts in regards to that. It's for that reason that now we've got this, and we are now supporting the industry to form the necessary structures to be able to access support from government to develop the industry But over and above that, we've had engagements with the National Lottery Board to provide for his funding for these various structures that I'm going to talk about to ensure that we do develop the industry in the same manner that the structures are waiting for, instance, in sports. So we try to facilitate that, and it's a process that we'll continue to monitor. And again, sir, when we come back here, probably next year, you will get a report that is working very well. And also, Chair, just to indicate as well that as part of IPEP, we have always identified the creative sector. The department is currently in the process of developing the incentive scheme specifically, the one similar to the film incentive for the other sectors within the creative sector. So that process is also in place, and there is a new strategy that will be implemented, I think, soon, because it was finalized last year. But because of the transition, it was moved to the Small Business Ministry. So, Chair, I just want to say that there are a number of interventions, and we are working with the Department of Arts to specifically move forward with items. Chair, lastly, to indicate that one of the other issues that related to the client artists was the need to amend the legislation, which is the copyright legislation. Our intellectual property legislation is based on the fact that if you have property, it's your property, you protect it yourself. However, in South Africa, what we have seen is that that sector is very vulnerable in the sense that it's not properly organized, but also the bargaining power for negotiation is non-existent, basically. So the producers, the recording companies, are the ones that have the bargaining power. So there are processes now. The bill is being processed in cabinet for public consultation, so it should be in the public domain as soon as this month, and we will then be going through with those amendments to ensure that we protect the vulnerable and ensure that the royalties for artists, for instance, are now properly paid and paid in time. So those are things that I just wanted to highlight, and if there's anything else on the side of the department that I may miss, I'm willing to respond to later.
Thank you very much. As I was saying here, I whispered to her that we do need to have a workshop with, as I'm listening now, I mean, it concerns that. Because if you are developing an artist and you are supporting an artist, what's the point if there's going to be piracy? And, you know, so I think it's important for us to just come together and see how we support our artists so that at the end of the day, because these are job creators. Artists are not job creators. They are job creators, and we need to enhance their position. We need to come together. We'll see when this can be done so that at the end of the day, we can look back and say, this was our contribution towards the empowerment and the support of our artists. But we would like to thank you very much. This is very interesting. It has taken all the time of the committee. It's very interesting, and we believe that this, as I said earlier, this is just the beginning. We do need to work in an integrated fashion, not work in silos, because it hasn't worked before. It's not going to work for us, and it's not about us. It's about the communities that we are serving. It's about the people that we are serving. We want to thank you very much, and we hope that when we invite you next year or whenever, you'll avail yourself. Thank you very much. Honorable member, you are invited to have something to drink or to have something to eat. I hope that there's something out there that you can nibble on before you go away. But our next item in the program, are you listening as well? Oh, okay. Thank you very much. And we have thanked the committee for availing themselves, because as I said earlier, it's important for us to work together for the benefit of the people that we are serving. So thank you very much. And we are hoping that we have this workshop that's going to ensure that we work together in the empowerment and in support of the artists, who are job creators, by the way, not job seekers. So we need to hold that, and we need to ensure that we support them. We are now stepping off the topic. We are going to have not a presentation, but a short briefing from the chairperson of Hensouth. So, because we have invited you, just for you to, before we go into recess, for you to tell us what is actually happening. Where are you now, looking at the process
that you engage in. So that is one. Let us have just 2 minutes, honorable members. Grab something and we'll have this received by the chaplain of Temple. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm trying to understand what I have in front of you.
Thank you, honorable members. Can we receive and receive from the chairperson of Pencil? Pencil is our best boy. So we want to keep track of what this first boy is doing. Because he should, the first boy should be exemplary, you know. He or she should lead by example. So Pencil will receive this brief input. We just want to know how far you've gone since we last met. What has been happening? Where are we now? If you can give us that question, and we'll ask questions, and that will be it. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you all for this opportunity that you have asked me to give a quick report. I know it's already late. Of course, when I came here, I thought this one matter that you expected me to report on, the process of the appointment of the CEO. I thought that was one. Of course, I don't know if I will get the report of that. Maybe if you had a matter that was being transported, I would have report on. So, all that we know was that we advertised this post on the 5th of March, that the advert went out on the 5th of March. and the president was the fifth of May. The advert was on the part of it was just a summary of it on the newspaper, and the rest of the advert was online on our website. The advert was translated into all the languages and it was accessible on our website. So hands on advert is there, it clearly indicated where to access the advert online. I don't think people who think that look at the advert carefully might have really not said. They just knew that the crowd were on the website, not going to it, but what time. But definitely, we indicated right on the application form. The response was very huge for the question of that. We received 57 applications, which was a good response, and most of those, the majority of those applications were online. So only a few people who talked there, because the majority of them were online. So the whole process of recruitment, it was done by the board. We only got the assistance of one HR person who assisted us with receiving applications, job machine, and preparing the card. The agency was not involved at all. So we, after receiving all the applications, the shortlisting meeting was organized on the 15th, just a bit before the 15th, where the grading committee part of the board, and the whole board was involved in the shortlisting, which was on the 16th of May. And then out of 67 applications that we received, we shortlisted 5 candidates that were found successful. And I think overall, you see what the selection process is due to us is that I think we wanted somebody who is competent in terms of management, somebody who is also competent who doesn't know something about language management. So language management is becoming excuse now. Somebody who can just be asking, we talk about the policy and be able to say something, but at the same time, somebody who's willing to be. So I think that was a difficult ask because when we most of the applications that we find, part of the application where somebody just strong in management and nothing about language. Some people who are very strong in language only and nothing in management. So the candidate that we shortlisted, we had one or two candidates who had a bit of potential, but the rest of them were still managers, clearly management, and not language at all. We, out of the first, we invited the five candidates that we shortlisted for interview. Unfortunately, one of the candidates whom we knew that this candidate has no knowledge at all with language. But we wanted to understand if this person is strong in management, maybe some of the things, you know, if somebody was better for the thing of language policy, then that person would teach it. So unfortunately, that candidate cannot, because of other placement, put up of the process. We were left with four candidates that we interviewed on the 29th. And out of those, the board agreed on one candidate that we are in the process of appointing. We held, the process is not as final yet, because we're probably that once the process is completed, we are going to give a report to GAC, as a president for the president, and then the full report will come to parliament, to the portfolio committee. So the process is not yet completed. We haven't been informed that candidate, that the candidate has been offered the position. The office is still busy with the security checks. Let me send check the security checks all before the offer is made. So the left agree on the contract, there's a performance contract that has been granted, that is going to be agreed upon with them. So that whole process should be able to be considered this week. So I'm happy that it is made before anything is finalized. We have this opportunity to meet with the personal committee to hear if there is a situation. But the candidate that we get is one I might not be able to divide the name. We got a candidate who is at the moment. He's at the university at UD. He's on language management. The qualification is got a doctorate in critical language awareness. He has got a credit management that is done through that, and other qualification that is done through the software. And was then and then the London School of Economics. So in terms of communication, I think to us that was better. I think overall, you know how we did the certain whole board was involved. We withdrew all our questions, and then we allow any board member, all the board members to respond. And finally, when we agree, when we come to the end, then it's all the board members call the same candidate. And then from there, we have qualitative discussion. So I would wish you to be somebody who can really stand and just to get qualified. So on that, that question of being a house project, I think everybody was very confused that this is somebody that who if he accepts, he can definitely be a resident. The only concern for that that we expressed was that he has never worked for government. He has been a lecturer. And it's one thing he won the South Nigerian World Award. So he has never been corporate government in an area that I think has been successful to develop. But all the other areas, the board was quite satisfied that it would meet the criteria. So I think that is where we are now. We are still waiting for the other checkups, if there is, that we will be able to qualify and say, to come out being a full-time checkup process. And thereafter, it's a true agree on our annual performance and the contract that is going to be offered. So I think that's where we are now with regards to that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Christian. Are there any questions? Honorable Paul Warm, Honorable Sulezi, Honorable Makondo, Honorable Mahama.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm glad for the presentation and the process that is happening. Now, there are tongue-in-cheek small another question, a very small one. What will be the current status of the acting CEO who was acting? Because his original position was head of a middle official, not even a senior official, that is Edgar Fanny. So that means you'll go back to him below the other two directors that were there. So he was a senior official or middle management official. So what is his current position being? Not that I have affinity or disaffinity to him, I'm just asking. Thanks.
Let me just say I'm happy that the person does not come from the high slab one. That is it is a little bit of a relief. Because it's not the person who is already in that institution. My first question would be the lender of the person. Because I think looking at the current status in the PES lab, it's also very important to note the fact that there is a gender representation that can be made, be taken into confidence whether the person is a whatever gender the person is. And then the other question. Listen, if within the interviews themselves, I just wanted to know what role was played by Dirk. Was Dirk part of the process of the interviews or otherwise? And then this one maybe perhaps would also come to us from the question for the committee and perhaps the credit advisor to advisor. At what level is the portfolio committee or let's say parliament involved in terms of the employment or the interview or whatever processes that leads to the employment of that executive person in PESLA. I'm just asking simple this because in some of the entities you would find that Parliament has endorsed the appointment of a CEO or the appointment of a senior executive. So I just want to check whether in terms of the legislation is there something that gives us an opportunity as Parliament to also participate in terms of who is employed, especially in terms of because there are a lot of problems that we have experienced. There's a history that is not so good in terms of people who have been leading this organization. I think as far back as 2009 or 2010. Can I also be clarified on that question? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mine on the advent
5-year renewable contract. Instead of a 5-year fixed contract. If the candidate is appointed, there will be already an expectation when the 5 years come that the contract will be renewed. How are you going to deal with that? Thank you, sir.
Chair, my first question has been dealt with five. Actually, my main question is the one that Tuba Makondo has dealt with. But there is also something that I thought the chair would brief us on, the recent court judgment on a case involving the question of employment, an unlawful, I think it's an unlawful termination of a contract of employment. How that, I mean, that aspect, first of all, but secondly, the dispute that the staff members, I think the board must also learn to be proactive and keep us informed about the developments in their space that the board feels needs our attention. So that we should not be calling the chairperson to tell us something and now we don't have enough time. But if the board is proactive to inform us about certain things that they would know that they are important. You know, recently I got a letter from this entity in Johannesburg, the survey house is, the big one? Marketeers. They were telling us about an issue that we had, the Willibrow issue, that those were built, they were guests were identified, and they briefed us about where they stand. Now, it puts us in a very comfortable situation, as an oversight put it, that we know what's happening. But if it was, it's not a reason to go. And then it's just another day in the Oslo, but after a year, after the reserve, etc. It does put us as an expert budget, it does create tension between ourselves and yourselves, because you don't agree much. And I think if you can then be corrected, there are difficult issues. Remember the last board spent 70 million on education, and I doubt that the committee was involved. I don't know where, in terms of education, because it hasn't stopped, how far this current board is with the expenditure on education, and it is going to make us very angry to discover that the board has spent X amount of millions on education and living in the core business. So, I mean, but if you keep us posted, we are able to speak to that and also call on parliament to intervene. Because remember, whatever we do has to do with the public. So if the public parts are not used adequately, we must be aware that if we are not informed and carry the dark, it's a bit of a problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Let me start with the first question, the one about the current CEO, the acting CEO now. The current acting CEO was appointed as a senior legal advisor of Pentel. I think when I was appointed, that was a senior position. So I'm not in any senior position. So I think it's important to the CEO home. So it's a senior position, which you remember from the court session that went through. Now, regarding to his position, he was given the advert was open to anyone, internal members, including himself, if he wanted to apply. So it was, he didn't apply, so we believe that he was not interested in the position. If he was applied, maybe he was not shortlisted, that would be something else, but he never applied. So which means that now he doesn't ever have that position to become the CEO. So definitely he was in his capacity of the senior legal advisor and also acting. So definitely what he means that is he goes back to his position. in a legalized fashion of the organization. So we hope that we will progress. The issue of gender equity, I think it's a very important issue that even the unions were keen to oversee to ensure that happened. We had a union that said, but the unions are not supposed to, I mean, they're not expected to be there. They requested that the majority union wants to observe the process, so they allowed them to kind of observe the process. And of course, the issue of equity to unions also is a very key issue. So definitely, I think it's something that we discuss with the people. It's a matter that is really to raise with him, that he needs definitely to make sure that it's attended to. DSP involvement, but we didn't really involve them in the integration committee. Of course, I mean, the act is very clear that the board appoint. So we didn't really want to include them into the integration committee. I think the last question, which I think the question for what is the, I think the parliamentarian for the honorary chair. But I'm quite happy that I think throughout, I think there was quite an interest from the chapter, also checking how formatic they are, if anything, there has been communication with another chapter about the process. But I must really say that, as I said, one of the magistrates said, that we need to provide time so that we report, not interrupting and respond on time. Which I think once we appoint the CEO, somebody in the office then that it takes kind of workload from myself and the chaplain. But now even if there's somebody who's affecting the issue to show what else is ready, just stay there for more than a month or so. So it becomes very difficult. But I think once our office is stable, when the public is stabilized, the CEO, we hope that there will be this continuous communication with the portfolio committee, and then we should be able to keep the agenda to shape that.
So it's one thing to honor the members that I raised with the chairman of PENSAL in our communication, that they have not submitted an APP and a strategic plan. And that means that they don't have money. If we have not submitted, what are giving the money for? So I want the department to come in after the chairperson has responded to this, because I had suggested that they put a hold on this, because they don't have money even to pay that person who's coming in as a CEO. But there was an intervention by the department, and I would like the chairperson to respond to that question of the APD, and also the department will come in.
Issue was discussed at the selection committee, the select committee on education and recreation, that we were invited to together with the family of Captain Kasa. And the reason, of course, the reason why the club were not able to develop the project plan on time, there was a financial problem, that was an issue. Until December, I think that's the only time that the club could get it. And then, of course, more serious, it was the issue of a capacity. From June, we were putting in June, July, the matter of the strategy was raised, and the board called a meeting on the 1st and 2nd of August to discuss the issue strategy. We requested the submission of the strategy, which was submitted to us. And what the management submitted to us, it was a general strategy which was developed for the general. It was not really specific to what the number was. So the board referred the strategy plan to the management to rework it and resubmit, and it never really came back. I tried September to call, when there was no activity on it, to call the meeting of the management, the manager, and discuss the issue of strategy and the workshop the strategy. That was on the 20th of September. And again, there was no good progress. Probably there was no good progress. Until this finally we went back to Captain Kasa, that when we were discussing about the German project, that we think that the task team will have to take this responsibility, because from the management effect, the managers that are there, it was difficult, there was no way that they could produce the strategy, even including before the reality was there, the other members that this contract for this was regarded. still there was no capacity there, because the 10th of October, when our private facilities, there was no progress there. So the only time that we took over, that we turned up mass completed the strategy, that was in January, when Advocate Finney was now executing. And the whole process, I think he was the intelligent result was to get assistance from CWC to assist them in the development of the project. Unfortunately, that process was delayed until, I think, March it was not ready. April, when we find out the strategy was still not ready. So that whole thing was delayed until maybe recently when the board had agreed to, when we had a meeting of the board, and the strategy was submitted to us. And that is the strategic plan now, and the ATP has been finalized. It should have been submitted. I don't know if you want to delay. It should have been submitted to us. It should have been the previous week that it should be submitted to us and catch for that process. So that, I agree to the ATP not coming in, right? Definitely, the panel was a copy. I didn't send the copy there. And when the copy is not there, the panel copy that was sent here. But definitely, it was a matter of incapacity.
Thanks, Honourable Chen.
Obviously, we have in communication.
Just the question that Makonde raised, a very crucial one, it wasn't answered. But whilst I'm on the floor, I don't know why he turns out would use consultants to draw their internal documents. I mean, the least they can do, could have done, is to ask the department to have them out, because the department understands the mandate. To use consultants to do your strategic plan, which you yourself understand, I mean, how does the government know what your mandate is, where your direction you should be taking, where you should be doing it? I mean, it's just weird. And we did raise the issue of the consultants with the first meeting we had in Pretoria, close to 12 months ago, but we are still there. And I don't know this marriage between pensions and consultants, because it's continuously going to cost you millions of them that you don't have. The issue that is generated in the ATP, pensions is breaking the law. Actually, before you start, you already have, what is worth the disclaimer? Because the auditor general will not even have words to say. It's a disclaimer, that's why he can't make an opinion. Yeah, he will not even have anything to opinionate on. It is. Okay.
In fact, this is what I raised with the chairperson, that you're using money that you don't have. Even if you engage consultants, where are you going to take the money to pay them from? I think this is what I was using. And this relationship between the department and themselves, I think it's something that the board should take seriously, because you can't expect, we've said this time and again, that you can't expect to get money from the department and not have a relationship with them. It doesn't happen that way, it can't. Whatever the act is saying, but you're getting money from me. I can just throw money and not be consulted and not know what is going to happen. Because at the end of the day, whatever you do comes back to me, the person who has given you the money. So I think, and you don't need to find out this thing. Okay, the act is saying this, but we have a relationship with the department. We can't deny it. We have to talk. That is why when everything was failing, you went back to the department to say, what can we do? It's because we have a relationship. It's like a mother and child relationship. A child can rant and rave, and the child may not want to speak to the parent. But when things are tough, the child will come back and say, hey, I don't know what to do. It's okay, you did. Because you did everything that you could to have the APP. At the end of the day, it was not coming. Department, what can we do? There is that relationship that we cannot run away from. And I think it's only good for us, both as pencils and the department, to occasionally sit down and say, what do we do? In the face of everything, we are related. We We have to talk about stuff. Department have to assist us because they are in this predicament. Officials at Kendall are not coming up with this thing. And we don't have money to hire a consultant. The department is what it can do to assist. We need to iron out this relationship between ourselves and Kendall and the department. We can't go on like this. Department?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So we've had engagements, the Minister has had engagements with the board on two occasions, and in those interactions there were terms and conditions to say these are the critical things that need to be done by PENSAL to be able to receive money from the department. And also part of that was to be able to accelerate the appointment of the CEO by also providing financial projections and completing the strategic plan and the APP, because as we speak, there is no official permission for extension for not providing the APP or the strategic plan, so the PENSAL would be in breach then of the PFMA and other prescriptions by the law. So to that effect, the Minister then put a deadline to say if this is not done by the 25th, it needs to be done by the 25th and needs to be a report done to the Minister, and then the Minister will engage with the board in terms of then evaluating what has been done. And part of that was the provision of the strategic plan. Then we have to then engage with Parliament, because effectively we have to go to the Speaker to be able to then engage with the Speaker, and then the Speaker can then be able to delegate the appropriate action to the Portfolio Committee, but you can't just come to the Portfolio Committee. And so there was a preliminary report provided on the 21st, and then what is now waiting for was the strategic plan, and the Minister is pushing for a meeting so that we can then be able to take the action on the other elements. So the unresolved issue is the stuff that is not, that were disregarded, whose contracts were disregarded, because that also pertains to that court action that is going back and forth. And then also the actual cash that given to PENSAL need to be accountable for it, and therefore need to be able to be comfortable that it is being used appropriately and so forth, to be able to the monthly cash flow forecast and so forth, which is still outstanding. So those are some of the things that we're working with the board to try to resolve. And of course, it's quite an important element in terms of how do we make sure that relationship is very cohesive and productive, so that we can be able to help PENSAL to be able to come to the party. And of course, the biggest pressure we have is on the 2nd of May, the language policy deadlines were there, and now there's a lot of work from the department that are saying we need help, and therefore we're not able to help if we don't have PENSAL operating at the highest level. So there is that pressure that is being put there. So the Minister is engaging with the board, and we will be having a meeting soon with PENSAL, and then we can be able to prepare a comprehensive report on all the elements that we have discussed and what has been done and what has not been done.
Thank you very much, SSG. I think we, as we said from the onset as the Portfolio Committee, that we want, much as our mandate is oversight, but we want to support as much as possible. And we know that this is not about any of us, it's about the people. I say this again and again and again. So it's important for us to sometimes forget about ourselves, but look at what has to be done and drive it, so that we achieve, because when we achieve, the whole society achieves something. And looking at the act that is kicking in, that the department has to be supported. PENSAL has a role, and we said it from the onset of the Portfolio Committee, that if PENSAL is stuck, it has a real effect. Other entities will also be stuck, government departments will be stuck. Nobody will be monitoring languages. So it's very important. We said it from day one. But thank you very much, Chairperson, and we are hoping that as you do your work and as
new person comes in, that person will have an orientation that's going to make that person perform to the best of his or her ability. I think that's very important. The orientation of the person is very important. And could you please, you know, involve the department in this and not work in a cycle. Involve everybody that has to do with the institution, because it's not your institution, it's our institution, and it's working for the benefit of the whole society in this very important area. The area of languages is very important. As we always say, your language, your culture, and your culture, you. So we are denying a lot of people. They are being who they are. So I'm hoping that we will resolve the matter, and good luck with your appointment, and you will be informed as the portfolio committee at the right time. But trying to resolve all the issues that are outstanding. We thank you for this briefing. We now off this area. We are going to the third item, which is the department on issues program. Thank you very much.
You have only a few minutes if you can highlight. Because we are in a youth month, we need to hear what your programs are and our youth being our future. What do you have for the future, CAC? Just briefly to highlight the areas, especially where you need our support and the areas. We know you won't give us the area where we have to exercise our oversight. You'll just give us those nice areas. Okay, over to you.
Thank you, Jefferson, and I really respect the committee's time, so I will whiz through this quite quickly. But just to engage, and my colleague Molineki is here, the youth orientation of the department is obviously very strongly located around our obligations to host the Youth Day celebrations and, of course, participate in Youth Month. But also, very critically, Molineki and his colleagues who also work in issues of children and people with disabilities and women is also to mainstream these programs throughout all of our work. And so that's an ongoing effort. In essence, our objective is to provide opportunities for youth to develop their creativity, to support young people in the development of their arts practice, to strengthen the network of professional arts and cultural organizations to support youth participation, and to model youth and arts projects in nodal areas to ensure promotion, and of course in support of a much larger program, the National Youth Service. And we do all of this work in close collaboration with the NYDA, the presidency, the Department of Education, and a whole range of other stakeholders as we deliver on this mandate. So there's a lot of information in this presentation, so I'll just move quite quickly to some of the issues that pertain to this current financial year. Obviously, the hosting of Youth Day and Youth Month is a critical area, and we worked very closely with the presidency on this matter. The National Youth Day celebrations will be in China this year at the old showgrounds. It's now a very uncomfortable acronym, it's called Swabak. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but it's a large structure. There will obviously be the combination of the program and the cultural program, and I'm sure all portfolio committee members are invited. With regard to Arts Access, we'll be hosting rehabilitation programs because one of our key partnerships is with the Department of Correctional Services, very much focusing on young offenders and people who come out of the correctional services system. So we support choral music, skills development, and a jazz extravaganza for young people in collaboration with the Department of Correctional Services. For youth enrichment, we work with a series of civil society organizations that promote participation of after-school youth in arts, culture, and heritage, and there are a couple of projects which I'll talk about in a bit more detail. We have a long-term partnership with the Field Band Foundation, which I'm not sure if the Portfolio Committee is aware, is an organization that works with field bands in the creation of a massive national competition that culminates in an annual event, and we largely support that component, which is the bringing together of young people in a national endeavor with international judges. We have a lot of art education projects because we do believe that art education is really fundamental role that we can play in the Department of Arts and Culture in supporting young people. So we covered youth in schools, promotion, careers in arts and culture. Last year we did a very nice career booklet that began to outline not just the creative elements of arts and culture, but also the technical elements. This is obviously where the Artist in School program and a couple of others really come to fore. Well, we're wanting to develop a mainstream strategy for targeted groups that speaks not only to the Department of Arts and Culture, but our broader family of entities. As has been pointed out by the committee on a number of occasions, 80% of our budget, in fact, goes to these entities, and we really want to pull together in supporting women, people with disability, and young people. The Public Art Program in NGE provides very fertile ground for young people. We specifically support youth-oriented proposals for public art projects, including trendsetter projects, including Infecting the City, and a whole bunch of other initiatives that really speak to young people expressing themselves in the public space. We're supporting a lot of young people through the NGE program and cultural events. In fact, this year, what we've done in NGE is to support a series of mainstreaming goals. We've actually set targets for the support of women, young people, and people with disabilities and Black South Africans in the context of the NGE looking core. The DX internship program essentially aims to give new graduates workplace skills, so we will be recruiting. In fact, we've already started that recruitment process of 30 graduates to come and work with us in a range of different areas, including human resources, including cultural development, language, archives, heritage, and a whole range of others. We support a series of departmental bursaries that the committee is aware of. We support heritage bursaries, and we also support language bursaries that are predominantly offered to young people. The Youth Man's activities this year, a very powerful array. From the 12th of June, the Dixon National Museum is hosting a youth empowerment event, which essentially creates a platform for artists to sell their product. I'm not sure if anybody in Portfolio Committee has been to Dixon Museum, but the space lends itself very well to that kind of market, and it's very centrally located. One of our key programs is the Maestri Education Tour in Johannesburg and Soweto. It targets in-school youth and, of course, our own interns, because we want young people to come involved not just in our work, but in what we do. And the tour takes people through a process of learning about the student uprising and activities that contributed to June 16 riots. They visit various heritage sites, and they engage in reflecting on the past and the future of this country. And that's been a focus of our work in Youth Month for some time. So the NYDA, which is one of our major partners in Youth Month, is hosting a series of events, and you can see that they don't necessarily speak only to arts and culture. In all month provinces, between the 3rd and the 15th of June, there are National Youth Day provincial commemorations. There's a big focus on health and wellness in Eldorado Park, which of course the Portfolio Committee may be aware has significant substance abuse problems. On the 11th of June, which is very soon, the Youth Parliament, which will be a very exciting initiative, it always is, to hear how young people see democracy. The President has called a presidential youth working group made up of deputy ministers to discuss deployments for Youth Month. And the deputy ministers have really been engaging, not just with the deployment during Youth Month, but with the bigger government youth program in a very concerted and strategic way. If, of course, the 16th of June event, exhibitions by NYDA, beneficiaries, departments, and state-owned enterprises at the Chwani Event Center that are all part of the day. So the elements of the program, there's the formal program, the cultural program, and then, of course, the major exhibition as well. And the Youth Month Communication and Marketing, you would have already seen this image of, and I'm sure they don't need to be branded, but do they speak of Converse and consumer titles that essentially speak to youth, and we see this logo everywhere. So the issues affecting youth in South Africa are really many and complex, and the presidential working group is a very powerful way for us to come together across a number of portfolios. And the Department of Arts and Culture actively contributes to three of those work streams: social cohesion, the National Youth Service, and optimizing youth machinery. Really looking at youth development programs at provincial and local level, and at making sure that through the community art program, which will be rolling out in a major way this year, that we really do focus on these issues. You would have heard in the Minister's budget book speech, we've also launched three incubators. These incubators are really a major new initiative by the Department of Arts and Culture to bring young people together with core institutions such as our performing arts institutions to learn, to create and to develop markets, and we're very excited by that. On Friday we'll be launching Market Theatre Foundation in Windybrow. Incubators we've launched, Casterbridge we've launched, Packhouse we've launched, Estate Theatre and the Flathouse Company still to come. And this incubator program will really might be a huge part of our work going forward, because we really believe that these concentrated efforts are exactly what young people need. The formulation of the mainstreaming strategy will help us report better, help us just ensure that we're a lot more strategic about our investment. The Deputy Minister is one of our key champions in this regard, and she cracks the whip regularly, so she's going to be reporting continually into the working group and holding us accountable for the promises that we make. And of course, we're in the process of finalising a series of MOUs, updating and upgrading our MOU with the Department of Basic Education, re-looking at the correctional services one, building new relationships as we go with, for example, Water Affairs, with a series of education programs aimed at children. So we really are embracing this notion of youth development, not just for June, but really into the core of our work, because it has been a slightly neglected area in the past. And so that, in a very brief way, is our contribution to the agenda today. Thank you very much, Chairperson and members.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, are there any questions? Honourable Hoodpoon.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you also for the presentation. You know, I'm always very passionate when it comes to youth work and so on, because I was once a youth, and I know exactly where the youth of June 1976 were. But the question that I need to ask when I look at this program, this whole presentation, I am tempted to say that this whole program is more NIDA's program, National Youth Development Agency program. Suffice to say that also the allocations linked to some of these programs, if I look at your partners and so on, and I see that most of these programs are and should be funded by NIDA and not by DAC. I understand the Fieldland Foundation, that's okay. Also the art education project from that side, but actually more from education side in any case. So one thing which is very important is that this whole program, the DAC youth programs, should be really really be interrogated with NIDA, because there are so much overflows, and then you wonder in terms of somebody mentioned earlier double dipping. In the end, which programs would you really be funded by DAC, or which would be funded by NIDA, and which would be funded by education? Because there are serious overlapping here, and I think more of this money could be used for youth art development and the NGE programs than what's currently explained here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Corporal. Are there any honorable colleagues?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think the Bonaga National Program, because of the joint program, we can see in the Pi House. Enhayibu bona ingathi ezinye ngezinye kwezinye indawo mhlawumbi nasezi-extrate apho ndazalelwa khona. Really, why is it concentrated only in one province? Or maybe perhaps there are other activities, other provinces. Because for example, I would not, it's going to be impossible for some of the members to join activities in Gauteng. But if there are activities that are out of the state, I can also try and attend those activities. Because actually we have to learn our approach to always be there when there are activities, not only come to Kiwa, and some of us are going to be a corner. So I'm a little bit worried about all of this, because there's a trend that I've been seeing. Your activities mostly are in housing. I think there's only one activity that went out
it's Freedom Day. Is it Freedom Day or which one? That one to PE.
Human Rights Day.
But the rest of the activity seems to be concentrated in. I don't know whether you are cutting costs or something like that. Maybe perhaps you really have to explain to us, because we still have other days that are coming that are very important to the South African calendar, except this one. Perhaps if in future we can also try to get to these provinces that are in the periphery, especially the more rural provinces, because they would really want to feel the presence of government in those areas. But while government is there, we're seeing it. Once government is there in rural areas, people gain confidence again to the leadership of government. So can we perhaps be explained about the there is an area that is very forgotten in Free State that is arid, and historically it has got a very rich history in South Africa, that area. People would really want to see something happening there. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me really welcome the program. It's a very good program. That's Natali. She is now in English.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Are there any other comments or questions? I don't know. If we had time, we would take this item by item to say, when you do this, what do you want to achieve? What's the situation? You analyze the situation and you are responding to intervene. Then what do you want to achieve? Because there are real issues in rural villages. Rural villages have real issues. And that needs the response of departments. Like, for instance, if I'm in where I'm deployed, there is an issue of teenage pregnancies there. And if you can use, you can bring back the whole notion of Intonjane, where you bring young girls in one day, where they are taught the values of an African young woman. How do you behave? When even just in Jane, those things, you know, we have done away with, just to bring every department of arts and culture to try to, in a way, bring back that dialogue between girls and Omama. I think it's important for us, when I think we are having dialogue, what is this dialogue? What are we talking about in this dialogue? I think it's important. If we had time, I would take this line by line, and we ensure that we know exactly what we want to achieve. I think it's important for the portfolio committee, and we welcome this, but I think we will have, and not just focusing on events, on the day, on youth day, but what we're doing every day to ensure that we empower our young people. Because it's important to ensure that our young people, we boost their self-esteem, we boost their confidence, because they lack confidence in themselves. As a result, if you don't have confidence in yourself, you can't have confidence in other people. So it's important for us to step there, to work in such a way that we work their confidence, we boost their self-esteem and self-confidence, so that they can have confidence in other people. Because if they don't have confidence in themselves, then that's a problem, a serious problem. We welcome this, and maybe it will respond on why everything is happening in one space. What about other spaces in South Africa? I'm giving it over to you now to respond.
Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, Chair. Just starting with this question of why in one space or the familiar spaces, it is a concern for us as well, which is why in our strategy, when we look at, for example, let's take the incubators, the strategy behind it is that we go to Parkhouse and have an incubator there because it will have an impact in the local community. And also, how do we strengthen the content creation? innovation that takes place there. And also when we look at the venture capital, that also needs to be located within that area so that we are able to revitalize the township and the rural communities. And when you're looking at Kashla Bridge in Mpumalanga, similar kind of approach is to start taking conscious decisions saying we need to develop the area here. But also the conscious decision we've taken is that with the MG funding, with the first round, we've seen that close to like more than 50% comes from Gauteng, KZN, and also Cape Town. And therefore, we will not be allocating more money in those urban areas. What we're going to be focusing on is the other provinces, but specifically, first priority is into rural areas and township areas. And that is a deliberate action, and we set particular targets for us to be able to meet for the youth. And so that's why it's still early in the year, and we realize now when we did the first round, saying, now how does this provisional spread looks, and it doesn't look good. So therefore we are not accepting in order more in those areas where we have funded more to make sure that there are areas that are coming in for funding. And I like what the lottery is doing in terms of now having more outreach and awareness. So we need to do more outreach and awareness in those areas. And we have started with the incubators, and it worked well. In Mpumalanga, it was powerful. The kind of response that we had with the individuals that are targeting the people to participate in the incubator, we've seen the impact, and therefore we are changing our awareness strategy. But it is a problem, and at least we are now having a hang of why it's a problem, and we're doing something about it. And we will keep you updated with our funding calls with each one to say, now this is how much is going to the rural areas and so forth. And NGZE is a powerful tool because of the amounts that are involved. Now when you look at these amounts that we presented here in terms of the different programs, so those are the anchor programs that we've been working on in the past as a department. So those are effectively legacy projects, but we need to start looking at how we spread the legacy projects into the different areas. That's why we're having a mainstreaming strategy, not only for us, but also our entities, to make sure that we can then keep them accountable for that. And then in terms of the NYDA overflows, inherently when you do have multiple fundings, such as lottery, and you have the NAC and NYDA, there is a risk that you could be double dipping. And the risk is perpetuated by the lack of transparency to say this is what you funded as VAT and what has been funded by NYDA. So we need to start then be able to share data so that we can be able to see the impact that our funding is having, so that you are able to also make sure that it is spread out. And so those, we've started engaging with the National Lotteries Board in terms of sharing information to avoid double dipping, but we need to take it to the next level to make sure that we can be able to make sure that we're also looking at those developmental areas, which is why their proactive funding is a great strategy, because it then helps to shift the balance of powers to those provinces that need the development. And with our also approach of saying no to further funding in those areas that are oversubscribed, it helps us also to be able to shift. So what would be useful is being able to have a greater transparency in the center in terms of the programs that are being funded. Sometimes it's quite important to have multiple fundings, but not necessarily funding over the 100% of the program. So maybe we might fund 40% and National Lottery could fund 50% and the 10% from NYDA. Then it helps with spreading the risk. So there is sometimes good collaboration that can occur, but of course there is also a risk of people taking advantage and being able to get the same money for the same project three times over. So that's what we are trying to avoid. I think that, and in terms of, very important question you've raised, Chan, in terms of what are we trying to achieve with all these things that we're doing. And it's quite important for us to be able, we have put this in our strategic plan, and then I think what needs to then help is to see how they translate into the different projects. And so that the report maybe halfway through the year, then it will help to see how the translation is taking place.
so that we can be able to then get a full appreciation of how we are planning the strategic plan. But it's quite an important thing, especially when you said that the artists are job creators, not job seekers. That's at the core what we're trying to make sure that we solidify, to make sure that you are able to create more opportunities.
Thank you very much, Acting Teacher. And as you look at the strategy and the activities, it's important to every time you organize an activity, how does it link with my strategy? I think it's important. That is very important. Because sometimes you find people doing what's nice to do that has nothing to do with the strategy. So I think what you are raising as well is very important. That when, or even if you're going to take this pen and put it there, why am I doing this? What do I want to achieve? Our activities should be linked to the strategy all the time. Otherwise, we'll be found wanting. Is there anything more that I should add?
2.2% with regard to the national days themselves, obviously there's a much bigger consideration as to where they go. So we had Youth Day in Kimberley last year, so it moves around. And these are very much determined by sort of forces above ourselves, and but in essence each province generally organizes those events, so we're going to get you as much information about what's happening in Free State and other locales as well. But I think the ABD raises a very valid point about the multiplicity of what we do. Suddenly this year in the NG frame we've had a lot of good proposals from Limpopo. We were wondering, business in South Africa has been working considerably in Limpopo, so we're starting to see more applications coming through. And as one of these education programs roll out, so all systems will benefit. So in that respect, that sort of silo mentality that you've been talking about will start to break down because people will begin to see opportunities elsewhere. So it's been quite an interesting arena in that respect. But I think that the other critical issue is about scale, and I think that we take that on board, which is to say it's not necessarily helpful for us to work only in one place. We must also be asking ourselves how that work pertains to elsewhere. So we hear the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
And we'd like to see change in society. We want to see young people who are thinkers, young people who look at consequences, not just do anything anyhow, not thinking about the consequences of their actions. So I think this department is charged with a big responsibility. And as the portfolio committee, I don't want to say we are hoping, because hope is not a strategy. Because that's what I always say. But we just want you departments to know that, as I've always said, that aspirations of the society are in your hands. Dreams of people, of South African people, are in your hands. And if you mess up, know that you are messing up our dreams and aspirations. So you need to ensure that the house that you are building is on a firm foundation. This is very important for us as the Portfolio Committee. We are banking on this department to change the attitude of especially young people in our society. I want to thank you very much for availing yourself, and we have now come to the end of the meeting. I declare the meeting.
Sometimes I just like to add the report online. Where do I find it?
PMG.org. I'll
tell
you now, sorry. I just need to save this.
And then how soon will they get up at home?
48 hours.
48 hours of service?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool, thanks.
I'll tell you the website now, sorry. Thank you. rg.org.gd.
Thank you.